Good afternoon, everybody. Okay, we are on page 219 in volume four.
219. I think your pagination is different from what we have in the book. Because 219 would be summary of halachas of other foods options during Shemitah. Yeah, okay.
Oh.
Not the kosher book, not the Shemitah book.
We're in volume four. Is that volume? Is that a?
Oh, did I take the wrong book? Oh.
Yeah, maybe wow. That's.
I grabbed the wrong book.
Okay, great.
I had a brain.
Okay, everybody ready? All right. So what we're going to do is to discuss the perhaps something that is much more. Important to learn about 40 or so years ago. I remember my mother draining the blood from meat all the time at home, even from chickens, even from steak.
Yeah.
You know, from you used to buy it not koshered and you put the salt yourself. Now I think it's very rare to buy, unless someone is on a salt-free diet or something. Okay, so on page 219 in volume four, we have, starting with that page, six different references in the Torah to the prohibition of blood. Now, at its core, blood is prohibited because of its use in the sacrificial order. That the Torah refers to even very early on, right after we left the ark, Noah's ark, Torah refers to the prohibition of taking a life. And the Talmud derives from those verses the prohibition of eating what's called Evar Min HaChai, anything that comes from a living animal. And certainly blood is, even blood when it's taken from a dead animal, of course, is also prohibited. But the Gemara there even only tells us that we're allowed to drink milk, which is also taken from a living animal, or eggs, because of special verses in the Torah that seem to permit those things. Right? It says that the land of Israel is flowing with milk and honey. Don't eat milk and meat together. It must mean that you can eat them separately. Otherwise, we might have thought that milk should be prohibited. It's taken from an animal and it's alive. It's like Abraham and Chai. Animal will accept milk and eggs. I have the blood, which can be taken from a living animal or from a dead animal, obviously. But blood is very much part of a sacrificial order. When the animal is slaughtered, the blood that immediately emerges from the animal is to be sprinkled or dabbed on the horns of the altar, or sprinkled on the walls of the altar. Different things are done. Sometimes on the curtain between the Kodesh Kedoshim and the Heichal on Yom Kippur. And sometimes even blood goes into the Kodesh Kedoshim and is sprinkled between the two, the wings of the Kruvim. So if blood is part of the sacrificial order, so it is too holy, so to say, for us to consume ourselves. It's only for the consumption of the altar, right? This explains why chelev, which is certain fats of the animal, the fat that surrounds the stomach and the fats that surround the kidneys, are also very prohibited, but only on the three animals that can possibly be a sacrifice. That would be sheep, cow, goat, right? The certain fats around those parts of the animal are called chelev. The other fat we usually refer to as shuman. Shuman, which just means, fat that in the ribs or something, So fat in the shoulder. So that is the difference, is that on these three animals, because the chelev, those parts of the animal are put on the altar with the blood, so the chelev is just as prohibited as the blood is. Okay? So they're both chayav kares, they're both very seriously prohibited by the Torah. But the chelev of a deer is not prohibited at all. Even the fat right on top of the kidney of a deer, a gazelle, a giraffe, a moose, right, or the seven kosher chayos, if you would take the chalev right in the part that you can't have from the behemos, cow, sheep, and goat, then you can have it leaving lechatchila, because there's no prohibition there. There's no prohibition at all. Although you can't have the blood of a deer, you can't even have the blood of a chicken, because those animals, although they're never a sacrifice, chicken is never sacrificed in the temple, and neither is a deer. Nonetheless, since those animals have to be slaughtered, so the slaughtering sheds blood, so the blood of all animals that have to be slaughtered is prohibited, with the exclusion of fish. Okay, fish have blood, but fish don't have to be slaughtered in order to be eaten. So the blood of fish is not prohibited to us. However, if we do have, let's say, fish remaining in a bowl or something, and you remove the fish and you see that there's like red juice at the bottom, we spill that out, you know. But it doesn't make the anything it touches prohibited. It doesn't make the vessel prohibited. You don't have to have holes in it or anything like that. Like we always had, you know, when you kosher chicken or meat, right? You have to have holes for the blood to go through. So that's the difference between fish and all these other things. And again, by the time whoever, I remember buying fish and taking home fish with the scales, you took home a whole fish. I remember going fishing. So, you bring home a fish, you gotta know what to do with it. All right. Today, we usually buy, a salmon cake or something like that, or something that's already done for us. Okay. All right. So these six verses are the page 219 and 220 are the places in the Torah. And you see that practically all of them are connected to the sacrificial order. Okay, I'm just tangentially, the Bechor Shor says the reason why we're not allowed to wear shatnez, which is a mixture of wool and linen, is because shatnez is a holy garment. The Kohen's, certainly the Kohen Gadol's garments, were shatnez. So you can only wear shatnez when you're doing the holy temple avodah. You can't wear shatnez if you're not doing the temple avodah, even if you're a Kohen, by the way. All right, so too, the blood is so holy, it gets poured on, it's sprinkled on the Mizbeach, so that it is, it cannot be consumed. This explanation goes just so far. It doesn't explain why I can't have the blood of a deer or chicken, which I just said before. And it's not a fence around the Torah. We don't say that chicken blood is prohibited because if I drink chicken blood, I may come to drink cow blood or goat or sheep blood. No, chicken blood is forbidden, prohibited by the Torah, right? So, but not the chelev of those animals, okay? In other words, here is the point. If someone eats the blood of chicken, he may come to eat the blood of steak or beef. But if someone eats the chalev of chicken or deer or something like that, there's no fear that that person is going to come to eat the chalev of a sheep, cow, or goat. Right? So one is a protection, and one doesn't need a protection. Okay? However, there are other reasons for prohibiting blood in the Torah. Right? The Torah says don't eat the blood because the blood is the soul of the animal. Because some commentaries you say it was not meant for us to be eating animals, right? When God put us in the Garden of Eden, he just said that you can have the herbs, you can have the fruits, you can have the vegetables, you can have what grows from the ground. But nowhere did God ever mention eating other living things. That permission, if you call it that, that permission was only granted to us when we left the ark. We left Noah's Ark because the Ark represented man's saving the animal kingdom. Not for Noah, we wouldn't have any animals. So now that the animals owe their existence, so to say, to us, to the human beings, so now we can basically shed their blood and eat them. Okay. Another explanation of that is that the world had to be destroyed because man turned to such incredible violence. Man became extremely violent. So in order to digress from the violence of human against human, we needed to channel that aggression and channel the aggression to slaughter animals and eat the animal. Until then, he was slaughtering each other. Okay. There was a Gemara in Daf Kuf involved in Masech Shabbos that talks about planetary influence. And it says that if a person is born as Mars is passing over Earth's orbit, that person will be violent in nature. So when after the four or five rabbis heard this, they all kept stepped forward and said, but we were all born at that time, and we're not given to violence. So the person who said this said, oh yeah, you are a surgeon. You are a moel. You are a shofet. You know, so they said that you channeled your that aggressive frame of mind into a worthwhile occupation or a worthwhile channel. Right? So this is the second reason why we're not supposed to drink blood, is because blood, because we eat. Okay? This is not to say that vegetarians are necessarily more humane and merciful people. Far from it. One of the most famous vegetarians of the 20th century was Adolf Hitler, Yashma. He did not eat meat, and they had incredibly sophisticated animal rights laws in Nazi Germany. They weren't too careful about how they treated their Jews, but they were very careful how they treated their dogs. Okay, so we have two reasons so far. One is that it is connected to the sacrificial order. Two is to prevent us from becoming overly cruel. It's one thing that we can eat the meat of this animal, but don't toast its death by drinking its blood as well. Drain the blood. Okay, the Gemara in Maseches Bechoros Daf Ches tells us that, and this is true for humans as certainly as animals, is that the largest vein, vena cava, it goes right into the udder for a cow. The blood is dam nechar v'nasis cholov. Right? The blood goes through a transition in the body to become the milk. This is true in humans as well. So that the milk of the animal is also permitted, but not together with the meat. That's cruel too. The milk is taken from the animal when it's alive. The meat is taken from the animal after it's dead. So it's one thing, I'll let you eat the meat. Don't eat the milk together with the meat. Right? So now I'll just mention a third explanation for the reason for blood being prohibited is that the Torah says, Rak chazak levilti echol esadam. This is number four. See it? Rak chazak, the bottom of page 219, verse 23. It says, be strong to not eat the blood. Right? What does that mean? Is there such a draw to drink blood that we have to be strong in order to avoid it? Right. So here is an interesting thing. Is it meant to move us away from certain idolatrous practices where the drinking of blood meant that you were communicating with the spirits of a recently sacrificed human being or animal for that matter? Okay. The Torah says that lo tochlu al hadam. Right? Lo tochlu al hadam. Don't drink on the blood. What does that mean? Don't drink on the blood. Because as Ramban says on the Pasuk, is that people used to slaughter an animal or a person and then sit around in a circle and then pass around little cups or little spoons with the blood of that recently slaughtered person or animal in order to try to communicate with that recently departed spirit. Okay, we know separately that the Torah is very serious about prohibiting necromancy. It is punishable with death by the courts. Okay. So the Torah tells us that even though ancient man was consumed with resolving the mysteries of death, they tried very hard to communicate with the spirits in order to conquer death or resolve the mysteries of death. So the Torah tells us, no, it ain't a mystery. That's why we purify death with the most mysterious of all mitzvahs, the paraduma. It's not supposed to make sense, right? Because death doesn't make sense. We're not supposed to try to overcome death, except, of course, but with a healthy lifestyle. Yeah, try to prolong life. You can't bring back someone who's already passed over to the other divide. And if we can, let's say in a hospital room, that means that that person didn't die yet. Only Kodesh Baruch Hu is capable of tchias amesim, of raising the dead. Okay, and those stories with your Elisha and Eliyahu, either you can say they're not the ones who revived the child, they prayed to God to revive the child. And that's what worked. Or you can just say the child was not dead. Neither child was dead. Because if the child was dead, Eliyahu or Elisha would never have the power to bring back a dead person. Okay? All right, so the third explanation for prohibition of blood has to do with the ancient Near Eastern custom and the knowledge of this custom of communicating with the spirits by drinking blood. So I don't want you to drink the blood, even if you're not communicating with the spirits therein. Okay, so that is the that's another reason. Finally, just as a tangent to this last pasuk, Chazak Levilti Acholas Adam, is that the ancient people thought that drinking the blood was very healthy. That you need to drink the blood of an animal in order to be strong. Okay, it's good protein. Right, so there comes the Torah to tell us that you don't need to drink the blood of an animal in order to be strong. Chazak, you'll be strong without drinking the blood. Okay. All right. Okay, so this is source number 7, the Ramban, that talks about communicating with the spirits. Okay. So here at number 8, the Or HaChaim is quoted, Chaim ben Attar. Right? He's always referred to as Or HaChaim HaKadosh. He died very young, but he really accomplished a tremendous amount. And is very, very much quoted by Sephardic rabbis since his death in 1743. The about the blood brings, because we are what we eat, and blood brings into our bodies certain ruchnias, certain ruach, certain spirits that may not be compatible with our religious pursuits. It's a spirit from an animal, and we don't know how the spirit came to the animal, right? So by drinking the blood of an animal or a human, we're mixing in bad spirits with our spirits. Okay? All right, so now we turn to page 222. And the blood of birds and fish. So I mentioned fish already. And now I already sort of spoiled the conclusion here. There are some commentaries that say that the blood of birds is not prohibited on the same level as the blood of cows, sheep, and goats. I would understand why, because the blood of birds is not meat. There's only the turtle dove and the pigeon are offered on the altar. Those are the only birds. But the fowl that we eat, there are some commentaries in the Gemara as well as the Rishonim who hold that the fowl does not need to be shechted. Again, if it doesn't need to be shechted, then it behaves like fish. Right, but okay, so take a look, if you will, Take a look at source number 12. Concerning fish blood, although it is permitted, if one gathered it together in a utensil, it is forbidden due to marazim. Therefore, if it is recognizable that it is from fish, such as where there are scales, it is permitted. Okay, fish do not have to be salted to remove the blood. Okay, fish blood does not make pot forbidden. It doesn't make the whatever it is. I'm sure that when you make fish, you want to slice it open and clean it out. And, you know, you want to make sure that you debone it and things like that. But if one did not do that and the blood got onto it, got the blood mixed in with bread or something, so the blood of those is not a problem. Okay, the next thing on page 224, right, is a Gemara in Maseches Krisus that discusses human blood. Human blood. Now, if it's blood from limbs or from organs, okay. This is the blood from the spleen, from the heart, from the kidneys, or in any limbs, right? Hare elu belotase. They're forbidden by regular law. You may not have blood from any part of body parts. And then he says, "Dam mahache shtayim." That was from animals. Dam mahache shtayim. Mahache shtayim are called humans. I don't think he means to include gorillas. Okay. So dam mahache shtayim. Dam shrotzim v'rmashim asur ve'in chayav malav. Right, you wouldn't be chai of a punishment for consuming the blood of a human being. My ein chayav in the love, karis. You wouldn't suffer the general punishment of blood, which is karis, being cut off from a people, like the punishment for eating on Yom Kippur or eating chametz on Pesach. Right? So now we have in a practical sense. Let's say someone's gums are bleeding and they're eating an ice cream sandwich. They take a bite and they see this red blood all over the ice cream. Right? We take a bite of a slice of bread and you start chewing a little bit and you see there's blood all over the bread. Right? Okay. So what are you supposed to do with that? So it's dam sha'al gabi kibkar, go rova ochlo. If there's blood that gets on and scrapes all over the bread, right? So scrape the blood off as much as you can. Scrape off what you can. I have this red paint on it. It looks like red paint. Or something is red. All right. As long as you scrape off what you can. If the blood hasn't left your mouth, right? You brush your teeth and you have blood. Right? So if blood hasn't left your mouth, you can just swallow it. Right? It's your own blood. But once blood leaves the human body, we should not... I don't want to put anything back in your body that left it. But the halacha is that blood that leaves the body, right? If you spit out blood or something and it lands on a piece of bread or something, then that bread has to be not only scraped off, it has to be cut off. It's probably what you would want to do today, right? Our food isn't as expensive as at the time is, per capita income, right? But if it's blood that you see between your teeth and it's still in the mouth, just suck it up. Take a drink. Okay. But blood that falls, let's say you have your finger bleeds. And some people do this and they suck it up. You should not do. Because that blood left the body already. Right? So you cut your nail and you cut it a little too short and it starts bleeding. You can't do that. The only blood that you can hold on to is the blood that's in your mouth already. It hasn't left your mouth. right? So if it happens probably most when you're brushing your teeth or you floss or something, and it gets a little too harsh. So for that, you can wash it out and spit out. Okay, so that's number 15. Dam sha'ala kikar, blood that falls out on a roll or something. Afal gav de lav kikar. It's not like you gathered it in some kind of a vessel, right? But there's still a mitzvah to try to stay away from such a thing. But if it's between your teeth, right? I feel mitzvah's perishing, but you don't even have to spit it out. Okay, Rashi says that blood even found on the bread is actually not forbidden. It's only forbidden because Marasayim. Okay, let's see what the Shulchan Aruch writes. Number 16: Damadam imperish mimen asur mishom Marasayim. Blood left his body, it's forbidden because it just doesn't have a good optic. It looks like you're eating blood from something else. So if you eat a piece of bread and blood spreads out all over the bread, you should try to scrape it off. You don't have to cut it off, you have to scrape it off. Okay. Right. Okay, so the number 18 is a halacha in mixtures, taruvas. So hold dam dogim with dam adam, hoil medina shari, enu osip taruvas. So we've learned many times already that when things that are permitted mix with things that are prohibited, and a piece of kosher meat mixes in with some pieces of non-kosher meat, right? Or some non-kosher meat, small piece of non-kosher meat mixes in with a big pot of kosher meat. So you know that if it's 60 times as much, the non-kosher meat just fades away. So it's as if though it's not there. Right? Okay, so. So the blood that comes out of your body, blood that comes out of a wound or something like that, that mixes in with food, is very easily nullified. It's nullified even because it's coming out of the body. It doesn't even need 60, right? The blood of the rove, because it's not really prohibited at all. It's human blood that left the body, true. But if it was prohibited, you wouldn't let the human blood that's in between your teeth be sucked in. You would never do that. No, the answer is it's not prohibited. Okay, what about blood spots in eggs? Okay. It's interesting that the Ben Ish Chai here allows that if blood is dripping from his finger, right, he can, if it's dripping hard, he wants to get it to stop. My advice is just take a tissue or something. Stop that one. Okay, what about blood and eggs? Now, that's the difference between the types of eggs. When you buy a dozen eggs in the store, those eggs are called in the halacha saftana da'ara, which means it's not fertilized. Those eggs were not fertilized by a rooster. That would produce an egg with a chick in it. Okay? So the egg that's just going to have a yolk and a white, if you hard boil it. So that blood in such an egg, when you have it, just making a cake, you're making a fried egg, you're making an omelet. So the custom, however, is like fish, to try to avoid it, even though blood spots in eggs do. You just take out the little piece of blood, and you and leave the oil and use the egg.
Sometimes they have blood. Sometimes you see them, right?
Yeah. Okay. Sometimes they're bright red. You don't have to throw out the whole egg, just take out the blood part. Usually the blood is in the yellow of the egg. Right? So when Jews make, let's say, a cake recipe that requires 6 eggs, right? We never just crack the egg and put it in the batter. Because if there's blood in it, then you're going to get the whole batter problem. So what you do is you crack one egg, put it in a bowl. You look around, say, okay, no blood, then put it in. Crack another egg, put in the bowl, right? If you want to make eggs, let's say in a skillet, you want to make a sunny side up egg, you can't just crack it and put it right in the skillet, because if there's blood in it, you're going to have a problem. It's hot, right? What the Jew does is that we crack the egg and put it into something else. And from that, you put it into your battery, put it into your pot, whatever else. You never crack an egg right into something. Okay, because it could be a blood spot. And blood is very prohibited to us. Okay, so let's read this inside. Maseches Chol, you see, page 227, number 21. So the first thing they say is kosher eggs, yule beitzim, right? Means tumidik eggs, meaning the eggs of a non-kosher animal, but they look the same, and they were cooked together with eggs of a kosher animal. Okay. So he says, mutaros, you're allowed to eat them. Beitzim muzaros. So beitzim muzaros is, I think, what we call the eggs we buy in the store today. Meaning, as Rashi says, an egg that wasn't fertilized. There's no rooster near that chicken coop. And all the eggs that are produced, if you crack them, there's no chicken side that's going to break open. It's just a yellow and a white in there. Okay, so that was never going to be a chicken or chicken. Right? So nefesh yafet tochleim nimtzal lekor adam zorek es adam ba'ochel es hashar. If you see blood inside the egg, just take a little stick or a little spoon, fork or something like that. And draw out the blood, take out that little piece of blood, and the rest you can eat. Usually we don't say that. Usually when something that's prohibited is mixed and you can see it, you have to take the whole piece out, you have to scrape a lot of pieces off. Okay. But here, just take out the little piece of the blood and the rest, bochel es hashar. I'm Rabbi Yirmiya. V'hu shenimtza al kesher shalom. Now, the kesher is... You see, sometimes you see in the yellow part, there's like a white, not clear, like the egg, the raw egg white is clear. It's like water almost. But there's usually some kind of like almost like an umbilical cord. It looks white. Sometimes you see it in an egg. That means that was almost kind of, like close to fertilized. Right? Okay. So the question is blood found in a fertilized egg prohibited by the Torah or only by the Rabbanan? Right? So Rashi says that since an egg is not meat, right? It's a piece of an animal, so why shouldn't it be meat? Well, because there's a shell around it, so it's separate, and the egg is considered parah. Right, you know that, right? Okay, and he says, "Misham yitziras ha'efroach maschalas." That's like the umbilical cord. from where it starts to be created. Given the diet of Sham, long it pazer b'shar ha-bitza. Okay. However, if it's found in the yolk, right, then that this is a fertilized egg, but this is not going to be a problem for us. This is if you're living on a farm. Nobody gets fertilized eggs. Although I do remember once opening up an egg and there was a little chick inside. An egg, you know, a dozen eggs, but it was a dead chick inside. Dead little tiny chick inside. So that was somehow got mixed in. No. Right? Okay. So this is generally and still, even though the blood of eggs, certainly the unfertilized eggs, known as saftana dahara, the blood of eggs is never going to make it, you know, make anything prohibited. Right? So, and yet we do everything within our reasonable ability to check on eggs before we do anything with it. Right? It's ironic that we've been accused, you know, in the early Middle Ages, until relatively recently, there was a blood libel in the Arab world in the 19th century of Jews, you know, drinking blood of... all other nations of the world have no problem consuming blood. Right? They meet dripping with blood. We're the one nation in the world that where blood is abhorrent to us, the blood of animals. You get rid of anything that resembles blood, and yet we're accused of the blood libel. Okay. All right, so the fertilized eggs, I'm not going to really get into that, because unless you're living on a farm, if you look at page 230, it says, today nearly all eggs that are sold in regular supermarkets are unfertilized eggs, meaning that they are laid without the presence of a male. Consequently, there is almost no concern that the blood may be that of a chick developing.
Rabbi?
Yes?
This is Mildred. I mean, I'm still working on the assumption, though I'm an old lady, is that we never used eggs that had blood spots in it, even today. You just say
yes. So if you saw a blood spot in an egg, let's say you, like I said before, you're never supposed to take an egg and crack it into the pot, into the batter, crack it and you see it goes into a bowl one at a time, and you see it's pretty clear, it's bright red right in the yellow. So probably, even though the Gemara says, and it's the Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam say that you can just like draw out that little redness and eat the rest. So I know eggs are getting very expensive now.
Yeah, but I can tell you 100% of the women I know would never use that egg.
Right, correct. I know the same for us always. But I'm just saying what the halacha is, to the point that, let's say someone did spill the egg right into the cake batter that you're about to mix, and you can see that there's a little red spot.
Yeah.
So in that case, I wouldn't say you have to throw out the whole cake. No, just take the blood out.
And what happens if it's too late? You already mixed it in.
Then the blood is certainly batel b'shishim.
Okay.
Blood is nullified 60 times. That's a tiny spot of blood. Depending on the size of your ingredients in your cake, that blood is probably nullified 600 times or more.
Okay, thank you for that info. Mm-hmm.
So if it's always good to, you know, to at the outset to make it as I've described before.
Separate.
Yeah. Okay. So this is where Moshe Feinstein says it's appropriate to discard the rest of the egg as well, right? Just in case, for the next time that the blood is found in a fertilized egg, right? So that sounds like what's called the harchaka, you know, it's a, right? But Ravad Yosef permitted, is page 232, he said that it's perfectly okay to use the rest of the egg after you take out the blood. Right? If you look on page 232, the second paragraph, and therefore, when blood is found in eggs that are sold in the stores, one may discard the blood and eat the rest, since they are unfertilized eggs. And even if there are eggs that are fertilized by males mixed with the eggs that are sold, the vast majority are from unfertilized eggs. And any that separate from the mixture can be assumed that they separate from the majority and are therefore unfertilized. And therefore, it seems, in my humble opinion, that this may be permitted. Okay. Generally accepted Ashkenazic custom is to throw out the entire egg in accordance with. Of Moshe. Okay. Right, so we see a summary of these laws on page 20, on page 232, number 27. He says, eggs laid by hens in coops that have roosters and hens together are called mufarot. Eggs, fertilized eggs. And if a drop of blood is found in one of them, the entire egg is forbidden, like nevela. And the egg renders a cooked dish or baked food in which it is prepared forbidden. And the utensil as well must be kashered to hagal, whoever wants. Eggs laid in coops where only hens are kept are called unfertilized eggs, inan mufaret, or saftan dara. Eggs, according to the leading poskim, blood found in them is only forbidden due to marasayim. The rest of the egg, and certainly the rest of the food, if the egg is cooked in the dish and the utensil in which it's cooked, are permitted. Concerning an egg that is uncertain whether it comes from natural or artificial fertilization, one should be stringent. It's a suffix of the Torah law. Okay. Right. On page 234 and 235, you have a summary of all these halachos. Okay. And now I want to give an introduction to what we're going to be doing next week. It's ironic that probably most of our kashrus efforts and endeavors and whatever we do to assure that we're keeping kosher in our own homes probably has to do with the separation of milk and meat, right? Different dishes, different how much we weigh. We discussed this a long time ago. So the irony is that usually whatever questions we might have about milk and meat are drabbanan in nature. We really have to work hard to prohibit milk and meat according to Torah's general prohibition. You would have to, it's really, because after 24 hours, the thing is considered mostly tzam of gam. It's not a good taste, it's a bad taste from now on. So it's, you really have to go hard. I hardly ever hear a milk inflation question where the food is prohibited. Very often you have to kosher a utensil. Yeah, that happens a lot. But to make the food prohibited is real effort. You really have to, go all out. Right? So the irony is that many people spend a lot more time and effort on the situation regarding milk and meat than on insects. But insects are always a Torah law. Right? And there's a whole series of insects we're not even aware of how they can get into what we're eating and drinking. So we will have a discussion of that. And you know, remember the New York Times ran a piece on the copepods that were in, swimming in the water when they stopped the chlorinization. So every insect, as you know, it's a barrier. It's like it's another prohibition. So I hope that next week I'll be able to convince everybody of the importance of avoiding special Torah laws. So la'im, worms, we'll have to see. You know, right now we're all breathing in microorganisms from the air, right? Okay, so we're going to have to have a good discussion on that. I think I'm going to just end a few moments early now. And we're going to continue on page 239 in the Chuvaret. Does anybody have any questions on some of the movies? We spent quite a bit of time doing the philosophical underpinnings of why we don't drink any blood and how careful we are with everything we do. The one meat that is always important to know how to prepare in this realm is, of course, liver. Liver is nothing but congealed blood. And liver, the custom is not to salt liver. The custom is to broil it. Broiling removes all the blood. And you don't have to broil the living daylights out of it. But there is a threshold. How long something has to be cooked to get what's considered blood out of it. After that time, you know, there's still gravy. Meat doesn't become like a stick. There's still some juicy gravy.
Can I ask a question on hard-boiled eggs? Why don't you have a chashak that there's blood in a hard-boiled egg?
So the custom is to always boil...
Three eggs
together.
That's from Rhodes.
So that even if one of them does have blood, it's batel b'rov. It is nullified in the majority of the others. Maybe two of them or all three of them have blood. I know, but when it comes to kashrus, we very readily rely on what's called rov, majority.
So why can't you do the same thing if you're cracking five eggs or more than three eggs? Why can't you? It doesn't apply.
Because you can. In other words, the halacha doesn't tell us don't eat hard-boiled eggs because of this problem. What it does say is don't cook one at a time or even two at a time. Because then if one has, one doesn't, then it's just one-to-one. You want to have a two-to-one. If you live in a place where somehow some kind of disease...
But that's like b'chatchila and b'dieved. If rov is a concept of b'dieved, it's not a concept of b'chatchila.
So then add the following connecting situations. One, blood in... Even if you do have blood in an egg, most poskim hold that that's rabbinic in nature. Right? Two, the eggs that we have that we're making hard boiled are not fertilized eggs. Everybody agrees that that's rabbinic.
Right.
Even if there is blood, there has to be a fertilized egg for the blood to be prohibited. All right. So yes, it's true that some poskim say then prohibit the non-fertilized eggs as a gzeira, as a decree to protect from violating the blood of a fertilized egg, which many posts can hold is a Torah law. Okay, fine, fair enough. But as it stands, we are mitzaref. We're collecting a number of situations which allow for leniency, together with the custom of always cooking three, with the vast majority that, you know, usually if you have three eggs, it's usually if you have 30 eggs, less than one is going to have blood in it. But we don't rely on rov l'chatchila. So that's why if we can check it, we do. But because of some of these other facts, we consider that it's not prohibited to make hard-boiled egg. You could say, yeah, it's a davishesh lamatirin. I have a way for you to make it permitted. Don't eat it that way. Only eat sunny side up eggs. Right? So those are good. They taste good. But okay. All right, everybody. I want to wish everybody should have a great day.